Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA Podcast. We are finally in the regular season. It's been long awaited. Before we get started, you can follow us at the NBA Pod on Twitter. In there, you can find all three of our Twitter handles. You can also check us out on iTunes. Please subscribe, download, give us some reviews. We'd love your feedback either way. We're also still looking for some intro music, so if you or anyone else you know is able to hook us up, let us know on Twitter. And lastly, I'm just going to right off the bat say we are recording this on Friday, October 28th, so there have been three nights of regular season NBA action. We are going to try not to overreact to one or two games, but naturally we may a little bit, so keep that in mind. With all of that said, I am joined today by Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. How's it going, guys?
Hey, Bri. It's going well.
Pretty darn good so far.
Yeah, both of your teams are undefeated, and my team is winless. So yeah. I guess we're going to get used to we're right back into the swing of things. So let's just start right off the bat. I think we'll just go... We're going to go back to our old format now that the regular season has started. So we're going to start with our since last time section, which is when we recap the biggest happenings in the association since our last podcast. We're not going to be able to touch on every single game because there were a lot and a lot of good ones, but we'll try to touch on the bigger storylines. So I think right away, opening night, Cavs open with ring night, host the new super team Knicks. Who did not get off to a very good start. They lost by nearly 30 to the Cavs. LeBron drops a triple-double. Morten, you know, half of the Knicks are former Bulls, so what do you think about the super team Knicks? Is it should we already write them off, or is it too early to do that?
Well, every super team, you know, can have a bad night. We saw the Warriors lose one as well, so they'll come back and win 50. No, you know, it's just, we all saw this coming, didn't we? Like a ball-dominant Derrick Rose, ball-dominant Carmelo Anthony. No, I will say this, though. I was kind of surprised in the way that Carmelo got his shots. He got the same kind of shots that he used to get. So it seemed like he wasn't really affected a whole lot by Rose's high volume. Mm-hmm. But overall, Rose is a problem. Noah looks gimpy. You know, Kristaps looks amazing when he gets his feet set, and I just don't understand why they don't use him a little bit more in the pick and roll, or at least the pick and pop situation. It seems like they went to it a little bit late. I want to see them actually play a little bit more through him as opposed to making him sort of a last resort. That'd be nice. Mm-hmm. But, like, overall, LeBron owned everyone from start to finish. Yeah. Kyrie, I think he dropped 29 in 30 minutes. There's really nothing you can do with those two are on like that, is there?
No. And Kevin Love played well, too. He had 23 points, 12 rebounds, I believe, in 25 minutes. Like, insane per minute production out of him. Yeah. And I think I saw that he had not hit those statistical thresholds, including three steals in his entire Cavs tenure. So, you know, we heard a lot about how LeBron may try to take more of a back seat in the regular season and try to promote Love and Irving as like 1B and 1C versus like LeBron is 1 and then they are 2A and 2B. Like if they really do start to maximize all three of those guys, you know, if I'm a Cavs fan right now, I'm feeling pretty good about how my team started the season and my chances of moving back to the finals for the third straight year.
You just didn't want to say repeat, huh? You were this close, but you didn't want to say the word. I get it.
Well, we're going to get there now because, as you alluded to, Morten, the other super team in the NBA, the Golden State Warriors, did not get their Kevin Durant era off to a very good start thanks to your San Antonio Spurs, Sarah. It was a 129-100 blowout in Golden State. Kawhi drops a career-high 35 points to go with 5 rebounds, 3 assists, and 5 steals. You know, Kevin Durant, in terms of just box score production, he fared pretty well in his first game, 27 points, 10 rebounds. Draymond Green stuffed the box score as usual. Steph was a little more inaccurate from three-point range than you expect, but still fared pretty well. Sarah, what went wrong for the Warriors here?
That was wholly unexpected, wasn't it? Like, I fully expected to start out the season 0-1. I think it's been pointed out they got crushed on the boards, first of all. I think I don't have the box score in front of me, but the Spurs hit more threes than the Warriors. I think that potentially happened.
Let me double check. I know they had more fast break points than the Warriors, which was also a huge surprise for, you know, that you don't think of the Spurs as a fast break team, but yeah, they had.
Was it like 12-7 or something?
12-7, yeah. Exactly. Yep.
Crazy. I don't know what the hell happened. But yeah, the rebounding was a big deal. The fast break points, like you said, too. The Spurs have been talking about that they want to push pace this year. But, you know, like, okay, everybody wants to push pace. I did not expect that was going to happen the first game out of the gate. Now, as you alluded to earlier when we were talking before we started recording, then they went into Sacramento and didn't play the same type of game, I think. So it's, you know, so they're not going to be at that level right away, but that was a hell of a start for sure.
Kawhi might.
Kawhi will. I feel confident saying that, yeah. Actually, I was going to say that about the Kings game. My mother watches this movie every Christmas that is super old and nobody else watches, and it's like on a VHS tape and fuzzy, and it's terrible. But it's based back during World War II, and so there's like rationing, and this lady makes meatballs with like walnuts or something in them because they don't have that much meat, right? And she says, "I'm expecting the sauce to cover a multitude of sins." And that's kind of how I feel Kawhi is, because, like, especially watching that Kings game, yeah, there's a lot of trouble areas so far that the Spurs need to work out, but my God, does he cover up a lot of it. So that's going to be fun to watch. But we'll get back to the Warriors. Everybody talked about, they don't have the same size, they don't have the same rim protection. We all thought Zaza would probably be good enough because they have these other assassins around him, but it sure didn't work out game one. I think they're going to find their stride, but this is almost kind of a nice opportunity for them to peak at the right time rather than having to be awesome all year long. So I think that could be good for them. And it's a nice little wake-up call right at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very good point in that they are 73-9, or I guess 74-8 is suddenly very unrealistic. And they said, you know, throughout the preseason they were not going to go for that because it wore them out last year. But, you know, it is a good wake-up call. It's, you know, everyone basically crowned the Warriors before the season started because it's like, oh, you swapped out Harrison Barnes for Kevin Durant. How are you going to lose? But, you know, you alluded to it. They don't have the same size. We said in our Pacific Division preview, they're going to miss Andrew Bogut a lot. Mm-hmm. Not only his rim protection and his rebounding, but he laid those crushing moving screens that were often illegal, and he never got called for it. So, you know, I don't know that Zaza can provide that same type of movement, which is what freed up a lot of their open threes last year. So, you know, I don't think any of us are, we buried the Knicks already. I don't think any of us are burying the Golden State Warriors. I think we all expect them to bounce back pretty resoundingly. They play the Pelicans tonight. I worry for the Pelicans' health in this one.
Yeah.
Although Davis is going to go off again, right? Like, we can pretty fairly say that. There's no one who's going to hang with him.
Right, yeah. But as we saw Wednesday, even if Davis goes off.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. So we'll see what happens with the Warriors. But that said, I mean, I think we're all safely projecting them still to win 55 to 60 games this year. Just it may take them a little more time than we expected to really hit their stride.
Right.
I still have them at 70, though.
At 70?
Yeah.
Wow.
Like I said in one of the earlier previews, I mean, I think Golden State is going to be the first back-to-back 70-win team of all time. Like, they lost against the Spurs. And, again, it's the Spurs, after all. Right. This is not a bad team by any stretch of the imagination. This is a team where their superstar had a software update and just went balls out. And, you know, he got to the line 15 times and drained 15 free throws. I mean, he was perfect. He still is, I believe, on the year. This was just a guy who asserted himself, and as we all know, you know, elite offense will beat an elite defense, and I'm not really all that concerned. If San Antonio has their number, then so be it, but I think Golden State will pretty much have everyone else's.
You know, yeah, what?
That's a...
We would be remiss to not mention the bench as well, because they got crushed in bench points. And I think their bench is going to come along, but they do have a lot of new faces there, so... It's going to take a little while. It's not going to be the well-oiled machine that it was last year and the year before.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And they don't have Jonathan Simmons, who went off for a career-high 20 points.
We
got to
give Morton a shout-out, yeah.
Yeah.
I will tell you, I did not see that out of Jonathan at all. Like, that blew me away. So, like, he's always been a little rough, but my God, he put it all together in that game.
Yeah. Now, it's so weird because I last year when I saw him play, I just felt that he had like the perfect, he has the perfect NBA body and he's athletic. And I just kind of figured if there's a guy out there who can tap into that, it's Pop.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't surprise me one iota if he ends up like averaging 14 or 15 points this year. Wouldn't surprise me at all.
And like, he plays amazing defense.
Yeah. Yeah. And the three ball is coming along nicely.
Yeah, yeah, he's definitely, I mean, there have been a lot of stories about him since that game, how he paid $150 to go to this D-League tryout, and now he's, you know, a very key piece off the bench for the
Spurs.
Started
from the bottom, now we're here, right?
Yeah, yeah, no, it's impressive. So maybe, I mean, I think that's the thing from both of these Spurs games that I'm most impressed with. You know, they obviously lost Tim Duncan, and for anyone still mourning, Sarah has a 6,000-word epic about Timmy on B-Ball Breakdown that you should go check out.
Yeah, must read. Definitely must read. That was wonderful work, Sarah.
Thank you.
Very, very good. But in terms of their bench, between Simmons and Dwayne Dedmon, like, they have some intriguing pieces off the bench now. So the Spurs really... You know, everyone always says this is the year the Spurs drop off. And, you know, even our resident Spurs fan had the Clippers above them in her projected standings. But, you know, based on what we've seen so far, the Spurs just may never die. They may win 50 games from now until the end of eternity. So we'll keep an eye on both the Spurs' quest for yet another 50-win season and the Warriors' chances of bouncing back against the Pelicans. Let's move now. We have to touch on this. Joel Embiid makes his NBA debut Wednesday night. Did you guys watch?
Yes.
JoJo?
Of course. Yeah.
So I want to hear your honest thoughts about him, because obviously mine are colored a bit. But he came into the game with a 20-minute limit, slightly exceeded that, played 22 minutes, had 20 points, 7 rebounds, and 2 blocks in a 103-97 loss. So... Sarah, let's go start with you, because you are the big man expert here. What did you like out of JoJo, and was there anything that concerned you a little bit?
Man, I'm trying to think of concerns. I mean, every now and then his footwork is a little stilted. But, I mean, his first taste of real NBA action, he had to deal with Steven Adams, and it did not really seem to bother him at all. So I would say that's a very good sign. He acquitted himself really well, like stepping out, hitting the three, which we know he can do. he even right towards the end of the game when they really needed a bucket, and he drove it in, and he was, you know, a second away, a half a second away from having an and one, but he got called for the charge. But
yeah,
that, I mean, he doesn't seem to be bothered by any pressure or anything. He's fully ready to go. So you have every reason to be excited. I was thinking about, there's that saying, when you look at someone through rose-colored glasses, all the red flags just look like flags. But I mean, I don't really see any red flags with him. So just keep on looking. It's all good.
That's basically how I'm feeling right now. I could not have expected anything better, especially, I mean, I just wrote a piece for the Step Back, which is FanSided's new NBA site, about why he's not going to win Rookie of the Year. And the big argument was he's just not going to play enough minutes, and he's going to be in this front court logjam eventually. Like, you know, Okafor was limited to 12 minutes in opening night. He actually played 16. Nerlens is out for a month after undergoing a minor knee surgery, but in theory, he's going to come back at some point. So, you know, in theory, Embiid's not going to play more than 25, maybe 30 minutes per game all year. But, I mean, God, if he could put up 27 and 2 in 22 minutes, like, maybe he can win Rookie of the Year. It's just, it's unprecedented someone playing that few minutes. I think it was only two times since the merger that someone's played fewer than 30 and won. But, you know, I think the thing I was most encouraged by is what you alluded to, is that at the end of the game, they were feeding him. Like, they know what they have in him. And Brett Brown has repeatedly said he's going to be our focal point offensively and defensively. You know, they backed it up on opening night. And I think my favorite part was him already, like, in the third quarter, he's already screaming at Steven Adams, "He can't guard me," which is just like, the dude is not short on swag. Which, you know, after a very hard 3 years in Philadelphia, he is a welcome infusion of energy. Morton, are you going to rain on my parade about Embiid, or do you think he looked as good as we do?
You know how there are guys who feel themselves a little bit too much and then can't back it up?
Mm-hmm.
He's one of those guys who can, and that's intriguing. That's really intriguing. Like, he may not have shot well from the floor overall, and he might have taken a few shots that were a little questionable, to say the least. But, I mean, that was just him trying to feel himself a little bit, trying to stretch his own limits, which I can appreciate. I think that was actually, in a way, a development tool for him. And he's probably going to do that a little bit. So I wouldn't be discouraged if I'm a Philly fan if he, you know, shoots in the low 40s, over the course of the first couple of months, because he's testing himself right now. He's also testing his body. He's testing the competition. He's trying to figure out, okay, how good am I really? Mm-hmm. What can I do out here? And it's insanely obvious he can do a ton. I mean, look, that the most impressive thing to me was the three ball. Yeah. I know it's just a single 3-point shot and whatever, but it was the confidence. It was the fact that he grabbed that ball and he just launched it. He didn't even think. It was like, right. Yep, I'm open. This is a shot that I can make. I'm going to take it, and I don't care if I'm 7-2. I'm going to drain it. I love that. That's just like, imagine if he is the type of guy who's going to be a 200-block, 100-threes-a-year type of player, along with maybe 800 rebounds and 1,500 points. Dude, like, that's... That, yeah, you're smiling, Brian. I know. But, I mean, that's the type of player we could be looking at. So, no, I'm not going to rain on your parade. I'm jealous. I wish I had an Embiid.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. I mean, to your point about the development, I've got a piece going up soon in B-Ball Breakdown about this. You know, I think it sucks that, you know, Simmons is out, Noel is out, Jared Bayless is out, Okafor is limited. But there are two silver linings to this. One, it reduces any pressure. Like, I think with Hinkie leaving and Colangelo coming on, there was pressure to go from a 10-win team to a 25-30-win team. Now you have that built-in excuse with injuries. So now, again, you're like kind of counting ping pong balls. But at the same time, that means Embiid can kind of grow through his mistakes. Like, sure. You don't necessarily need to hand the ball to your veterans in closing minutes. You know, Gerald Henderson was the one who took that ill-fated last-second shot, which was we're not going to talk about that. But, you know, that just means they're going to feed Embiid and just let him grow through this, because this is still another building season, especially until those injured guys come back. You know, Simmons the earliest he's back is January. It sounds like Nerlens and Jared Bayless are out for a month. So I'm encouraged by that. I will say before we move on, just want to extend a hearty middle finger to anyone who has now completely reversed course on Sam Hinkie. I cannot tell you how many people we have seen in the last week or so that have now released these glowing profiles of Embiid and the process, whereas a year ago it was this guy's a bust and Hinkie's a fraud. Let it be known that we were watching, and Retweet Armageddon is coming. We have a list.
We know you love the middle finger. We yes. know you feel things like the middle finger.
Yeah, sorry, Russell Westbrook. That was not a good look on our part.
He still was passionate about it. I mean, come on.
He was. Yeah, he was really got it. Passionate. The double barreled middle finger, too.
Yeah.
Was,
and yeah, he didn't give up. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he gave two. He gave two. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So just want to let people know that we were watching and your reckoning is coming. Let's move on to the Lakers and the Kings, who, I mean, the Lakers on opening night beat the Mike D'Antoni Rockets in possibly the most fun game I've watched, just because neither team played any semblance of defense. The Kings thumped the Suns and then were pretty competitive against the Spurs. So are they competent this year? Is this a thing?
Maybe. I mean, look, when you have Luke Walton and Dave Yeager helming, you know, those squads, there's going to be an increase in quality. I mean, I just can't imagine any scenario where that wouldn't be the case. And it's not like there isn't talent. Like, even on the Kings, Boogie, like, under the right head coach, is undoubtedly the best center in the league. He might even be, like, a top seven, top six talent, top six player, even, if he was on a winning squad. Like, he's legitimately a beast and should be an all-NBA guy for the next 10 years. Then we look at the young and gunning Lakers now. Like, they're testing out Brandon Ingram as a pseudo point guard, like walking the ball up the court, initiating the offense. Like, there's so much flexibility going on with all this talent that these coaches have some tools that they can try to utilize. Like, okay, we can test out some experiments here. I know from experience having played this with this guy before that we can do this and this and that. So I think it's all about coaching right now. Yeah, they look competent, and let's just hope that, especially for the Kings' sake, that Dave Yeager isn't fired in about 15 games.
Right.
I mean, that's.
Boogie can't get meningitis. That's the only thing that could undermine them.
Damn you, Boogie, if you do. They're not going to put it all on Boogie's health, because that's exactly as logical as firing your head coach for it.
Well, that's what they did. That's what they did with Malone. He got off to that good start, and then Boogie got meningitis, and then he got canned. And they've been
so
downhill
crazy
ever since. Yeah.
Like, could you imagine, like, the Spurs firing Pop 15 games into a season? Like, oh, you know, Kawhi went down with an illness. Pop, you know, you had a nice two decades. Off you go.
Yeah, we lost 10 games. Bye, Pop.
Yeah.
I will tell you, getting a good look at the Kings last night, they defended. Like, Yeager has them. Their offense is still kind of just Boogie, but and Rudy Gay every now and then. But yeah, actually, you know what? McLemore looked pretty good last night until Kawhi did what Kawhi does. But you know what? We shouldn't even, like, I've seen a lot of people talking about that today, and yeah, it was amazing and really fun to watch. But I don't think it's that big a deal for McLemore. I mean, Kawhi's done that to Chris Paul, Stephen Curry, multiple times. I wouldn't feel bad if he took the ball from me. I'd be like, well, that was bound to happen, really. So,
well, you would like if Kawhi took the ball from you. Come on, you just have the opportunity to play with Kawhi. I mean,
that would be okay. So,
yeah, you'd be okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, they looked pretty good last night. And at one point, Yeager was literally, like, right next to the play, clapping and cheering them on as they were defending. And it was actually kind of fun to watch. So it was not fun to watch them, you know, slow the Spurs down at all, but it was nice to see them actually really working on that side of the ball. So if they continue to do that, they can compete in this league. Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember
I'm
when
encouraged.
Rudy Gay came into the league, he was actually billed as a two-way player. Like, he had the athleticism, he had the anticipation. like at UConn, he was able to switch a little bit more. He was playing the passing lanes, and somehow in the middle of it, he got away from it. And if Jaeger can somehow tap into that aspect of his game again, like, it's not like he's a worse athlete now. Like, you know, it could be fun to see Rudy Gay actually establish himself as a pseudo defender. I don't think he's ever going to be a plus defender. I think he's picked up too many bad habits. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the opportunity is there for him.
And just the fact that he's not completely mentally checked out is a great sign for the Kings, because he, yeah. you know, came into the year, it leaked, presumably from his camp, that he's not going to pick up his option next summer, and he's presumably getting the hell out of Sacramento, you know, as soon as he can. So it would be very easy for him to just kind of mentally check out this year, but the fact that he's not bodes well both for him and his future job prospects, but also the Kings. Like, if, you know, he's one of the most logical guys to be moved in the next couple months, and if he's played well so far. So, like, they might actually get something of value if a contender identifies a wing player as one of their primary needs. So, you know, as a Sixers fan, I'm bummed because we own the Lakers' top three protected pick and we have a pick swap with the Kings, so I want both of these teams to be a tire fire. But for the sake of your own fan bases, I'm very excited for you guys, for both Lakers and Kings fans. You know, it's been a long time since either one of you had something to cheer about, so... I hope it keeps up. Speaking of presumed tire fires that actually were not, at least on opening night, the Chicago Bulls actually beat the Celtics with Dwayne Wade and Michael Carter Williams hitting threes. Morton, what happened?
I think we're in the upside down.
Yeah.
I mean, I was watching that game live. I was staying up. Because I just had to see the first Bulls game, and I was sure as hell that, you know, the combination of Boston's defense and the presumed poor shooting of the Bulls would just make it a tire fire, and I wanted the misery. Mm-hmm. I still don't have an answer. The only I was toying around with a theory today, because, you know, we've all talked about how defenses can guard the Bulls by just packing the paint and letting them shoot, right? Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. Great defenses also rotate out to even poor shooters. They don't close out hard, but they close out. Mm-hmm. But when you leave a guy completely open, you sort of forget these are still NBA players. Mm-hmm. And I think that the whole mentality of the Bulls can't shoot kind of affect Boston a little bit. I think they were kind of lax. They didn't close out even a little bit at times. and it just, I think they just presumed, oh, okay, that's going to be an automatic miss. We're going to get the rebound and we can go run. And then, you know, just slowly but surely, they started hitting from the outside. It wasn't until a little bit later in the game that they started rotating a little harder and closing out a little harder. So, yeah, I don't think this is going to keep up like at all. I think this was like the best outside game they're going to have the whole year. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. Even Butler joined the action like 4 of 6.
Yeah.
And Rondo hit a three. Like, what the hell? I mean, everything just... This was the perfect storm in many ways. But they won on the glass, though. I think they were plus 19. So I'm not really putting too much stock into it. And you know, Boston actually had a low-key bad game. Like, quote-unquote bad game.
Yeah, I mean,
Horford and foul trouble as well.
You kind of wonder if they were just tired. You know, the Bulls had not played a game. The Celtics were coming off the second game of back-to-back. So it could have just been as simple as a schedule loss. You know, we talked about Al Horford's rebounding as kind of the weak link in his game. And, you know, the fact the Bulls abused the Celtics on the boards, that's something, you know, again, we're not pulling the alarm on any team after one game, but these are things that you should watch out for in the coming games. And if they become trends, then it might be something worth noting. So, you know, there are fluke games, and Dwayne Wade is probably not going to hit 4 threes in a game again. I think that was the first time he did it since January of 2013. So you're not going to count on that all the time, but, you know, just something to keep an eye out on.
He'll probably increase it. Like, he will. I could see him end the year with like 85 threes. I mean, that's that's fair. It's the percentage that concerns me. I just want them to keep defenses honest if I'm going to like believe in this team. Like because and at this point I don't. I mean one win is not going to change anything, at least not now, but if it becomes a theme that he and Butler can start creating long ball and at least keep defensive honest, you know, okay, I'll buy into that a little bit. But it was a fun game though. Like that last shot from Wade. Yeah. I mean, that was fun, and his homecoming and all that. Yeah. Him looking like Urkel in many pictures circulated around the league, you know, with his shorts pulled up and all that. It's good.
Yeah, the Bulls have this weird Jason Pat of today's fast break tends to know that for whatever reason the Bulls are always really good on Thursday night TNT games, and it seems like this happened a couple years ago too. It was Derrick Rose's first game back after the ACL tear. And I think this is the same game. It was against the Knicks, and it was just an awful game, but he hits the game winner.
Yeah.
And then afterward, Joakim Noah gets on the microphone after the game, is like, I love this shit. So the Bulls tend to feed off of these like opening night narratives, it seems. So we'll see if it's sustainable moving forward. They did sign RJ Hunter, which I'm in love with that signing. It's a guy I thought the Sixers should have tried to go after. It should definitely help their spacing concerns, if nothing else. And it, again, goes to show that Danny Ainge has pissed away a lot of his good assets because they had to cut what could be a productive player for nothing. Let's move on. Oh, one more thing. I'm going to be going to the Bulls Pacers game tomorrow, so I'm actually very excited to see Miles Turner versus this Bulls front line because that's going to be a fun battle.
Oh, he's going to probably repeat his 30-pointer.
I hope so, yeah. So now let's move to the Atlanta Hawks. They beat the Wizards on Thursday night. Dwight Howard looks amazing. Had 11 points, 19 rebounds, 3 blocks. You know, we talked about him before the season as kind of a guy who might have a resurgent campaign. And there was a story that came out, I think, from ESPN.com's Tim McMahon the other day about this like inner tension in Houston last year, where it sounds like management really was pushing for Clint Capella to play more and decrease Howard's role, and Howard did not take kindly to that. So the fact he's on a team that actually wanted him, I think the Howard that was so dominant with the Magic in the late 2000s, that's probably gone for good. But I don't think the reduced shell of himself that we saw with LA and this last year in Houston, I don't think that's where he is. I think there is still a better Dwight Howard in there. So the fact that he had such a productive game against the Wizards was encouraging. Paul Millsap's still a monster. He had 28 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists. I think the big news out of Atlanta is they signed Dennis Schroeder to a 4-year, $70 million extension. So Morton, what do you think about that price for Mr. Schroeder?
I like it. Like, you know, we know that he's a capable point guard. We know he's young. We know he's got loads of potential. And what makes that contract safe, in my opinion, is the coaching staff, actually. Like, we know that he's going to get proper coaching. We know that his development is in the right hands. Like, I would consider such a contract, like, a larger gamble if he was associated with a bad organization. And because you would have that constant risk of thinking, okay, he doesn't have like the development tools to his aid, but here he has every chance of becoming, you know, a lot better year to year to year. So I think it's great value for him, even though he's, you know, he might struggle at times because he's still young and that outside jumper is still not automatic, but his talent is just so undeniable.
Yeah, I think once they traded Jeff Teague, you had to figure that this was the end game. They were definitely going, they weren't going to trade Jeff Teague and then let Schroeder, you know, test the free agent market next summer and possibly leave and leave them without a starting point guard. I mean, this is Evan Turner money, which, you know, I'd much rather have Dennis Schroeder as my starting point guard than Evan Turner coming off my bench as my backup combo guard. So, you know, again, it's hard to put these into perspective. Like, these next couple of years are just going to be weird because you have guys like John Wall, who's still on this 5-year, $80 million deal. And compared to that, this is an absurd price, but under the new cap, if we're looking ahead, this is fair. This is exactly, you know, I think, honestly, I would be surprised if there is a worse point guard that did not get as much, if not more, than Schroeder next year. So
this is like 11.5, right? Under the old CBA, or not CBA, under the old cap?
Old cap. That sounds, that sounds about right. Yeah.
11.5, right. Like maybe 12, but that's fine, right? I mean,
yeah. I mean, you're going to have to pay at least, starting next year, you're going to have to pay at least $20 million a year to get a above average point guard, which I think Schroeder, you know, he's 22, 23. Like you lock him in at this price now, there's a good chance he continues to develop over the coming years. And as you alluded to, Mort, like they've got a great coaching staff down there. So yeah. I have confidence that he's not going to plateau. So I'm actually a big fan of this deal. Going to give a quick shout out to this new site that I launched with a couple of the former Hoop 76 writers called NBAAssets.com. If you want a kind of unique way to look at every team's assets, we rank every team, and then we also rank the top 100 assets league-wide. And Schroeder's a guy who we actually were grappling with right now because we're trying to figure out, you know, where to put him. Does he break into the top 100 league-wide? You know, I'm leaning toward yes. I'm leaning toward him supplanting Bradley Beal, but we're going to wait and see a little bit to see how he fares as the full-time point guard before we make any drastic moves there. But check out NBAAssets.com or NBAAssets on Twitter if you want a look at that type of thinking league-wide and team-wide. So I think the last game we're going to touch on is this Clippers-Blazers game from Thursday night, which got very physical and very testy, even though Chris Paul denied that after in the post-game interview. You know, I think the big takeaway is, you know, Blake Griffin has 27 points, 13 rebounds. He's back, right, Sarah?
Mm-hmm. That's what we talked about in the preview. I was expecting to see from him and hoping to see as an NBA fan. Yeah, he's back. I didn't get to see too much of the game because they were on at the same time as the Spurs. But when I flipped over, yeah, he was doing all the old Blake things. So, and DeAndre Jordan was doing DeAndre Jordan things at the free throw line, but that's okay because they still won. So, how did Damian look last night?
He was good. I mean, he. It seemed like he got frustrated at times with Chris Paul, because Chris Paul does all of his like veteran.
Yeah,
I'm not playing dirty, but I actually am. Right, right. I mean, he had 29 points, 10 rebounds, 3 assists. So like, had a big game. But it definitely seemed like CP3 got into his head a little bit. So you know, I didn't pick Portland as a playoff team, and I'm already starting to regret that. I would love to see these two teams in the playoffs. I think for whatever reason, they seem to really not like each other. So I think that would be a fun matchup.
Well, who likes the Clippers?
Exactly.
Fair point. Yeah. Yeah. I guess you could say that about the Clippers versus anyone. That is a fair matchup.
Even the Brooklyn Nets have like a rivalry with them. Like, it doesn't matter. If they, in a preseason game, they meet some German team, they're going to have problems with them. My God, they're the true villains. We always use the term villain for a specific team every year. This time it's the Warriors, but like we should really devote that title to the Clippers full time. They've earned it.
Yeah, and I think they should buy into that.
Totally. He did. Did you hear Chris Paul's interview at the end? It's like, yeah. I mean, he's like, we don't care. We talked about embracing that, so. I think that's their goal this year is to embrace being the bad guys.
I like it. It's a fitting role for them. So, yeah. I was very impressed. You know, Sarah, you and I, and Mort, I think you also had the Clips at 2, right? Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So and all three of us.
I'm kind of regretting that, though.
Oh, you want the Spurs now?
Look, Kawhi, the way he's playing right now? Yeah.
Well, all three of us had them as the number 2 seed, so we were expecting this kind of debut from the new look Clippers, but You know, it's just good to see Blake back. Like, it, you know, you never want to, I don't care who you're a fan of, you never want to see elite talent sabotaged by injury. And, you know, Blake's a top 15 guy. Like, he's an insanely good basketball player. So it's just fun to have him back in the league, regardless of your team affiliation.
Draining threes.
Yeah.
Like, effortlessly. That shot, like, it looks tweaked.
Yeah, I mean, it. He was showing that off during the preseason some. It seems like that's definitely going to be part of his game this year, which that adds a very new, very scary element to Blake Griffin. So I think now is a good chance. You know, we mentioned Kawhi already. Let's move into our Where Amazing Happens segment. This is usually where we talk about a lot of the fun off-court parts of the NBA, but since we're only three nights in, hasn't been too much on that front. So instead, I think this time, let's just devote it to all of the amazing performances that we've seen, because we're three nights in, and there have been some insane outings from a number of good players. So, you know, we brought up Kawhi. Sarah, he has 35 against the Warriors, and then he has 30 against the Kings. He has 5 steals in both games. I think I saw Alias Stats said he was like the first guy to have 65 and 10 in his first two games in like since the '70s or the '80s, like in 3 decades. So, you know, the steals we've come to expect. He's, you know, we all of us had him in the Defensive Player of the Year category. Is this scoring gonna keep up?
I'm nodding. You guys can't see that right now, but yes. Yeah, I'd be really surprised if he averages less than 25 a game. I'm pretty sure it's going to be above that. Of course, that, you know, if they end up blowing out a bunch of teams, then maybe not. But yeah, he's scoring so easily right now. He's gotten much more patient with the ball. And actually, this guy who has known him since college, Clint Parks, I think, who's on Twitter, he tweeted that out last night as well. He said the game has slowed down for him so much. Mm. So he's so patient right now. You can't rush him. You literally run 3 guys at him and he doesn't care. He's faking. He's going to find the angle. He's passing really well right now as well. So I expect his assist numbers to go up too this year to 4 or 5 around there per game at least. And he just... The free throws are something that I'm really interested to see if he can keep getting to the line. I think he had like 15 in the first game and only 7 last night. And there were definitely a few where you're like, okay, he's still not getting those calls that a Kobe or a James Harden would get, because he, you know, he would make the exact same move you'd seen those guys make a million times, and it was always free throws. And it isn't always free throws for Kawhi still. But that could be huge if he could get some more of those freebies. So I'm going to keep a close eye on that and just how many pick and roll handles he gets this year, because I have talked about that ad nauseum, but that he just looks really good handling the ball right now. So yeah, he's going to keep scoring at a very efficient high rate.
Yeah, I think the system player complaints about Kawhi, if your piece about him from earlier this year didn't put those to rest, you know. What's impressed me the most is he's now like fearless in isolation situations. Whereas before, you know, the Spurs, we associate them with ball movement generating easy offense, or Kawhi would steal the ball and just have an easy fast break transition opportunity. But there was a possession where he's being guarded by Andre Iguodala, who is, you know, a first team all defense candidate, a finals MVP, and he just like calmly walks up against Iggy, like drives to the basket, fades away, pulls up, shoots right away. Like I guess what that guy said, the game has slowed down for him. Like he's just so, he knows exactly what he's going to do, and he doesn't really care what the defender is going to do. Like, he knows how he's going to fake out the defender. And I'm wondering, almost because he's so good on defense, if he can exploit those tendencies. Like, he knows what defenders are going to do because he is, you know, he's one of the best of the league at doing that. So he can then kind of use that to his advantage. You guys both had him as your MVP. I regret not having him as my MVP at this point.
You should.
Yeah, I didn't officially pick him for reasons of superstition, but...
Oh, right. right. But you wanted to.
Yeah.
In regards to the slowing down thing, I actually wrote a piece that I delivered to Beatball Breakdown for its season preview ebook, which isn't up yet. But I'm kind of glad that this was touched upon, because my whole piece was set up in the way of looking at the game being slowed down for guys entering their like their fifth or sixth year. Mm. Like, this is his fifth, right? I believe this is his fifth.
And started 2012, six? So 12, 13, 14, 15, 16.
He was drafted in 2011, right?
So this might be his sixth.
His sixth? Yeah, okay. I think it's his sixth,
yeah.
All right, fair enough. But like same 50 point. Or 60, yeah. Same point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like there is a time in like some of the great players' career where everything slows down, where decision making comes more natural, where the game flows to their advantage, where this player understands that when the ball comes to him, he's like he has the best odds out of anyone on the court of getting a positive result. Kawhi right now, and that's also why I picked him as the MVP, because last year, you know, you saw a smidge of that. You saw him getting more comfortable. You saw him playing more pick and rolls. You saw him, or you actually heard from Pop that he was looking at Kobe and Michael in terms of how to set himself up. And I just thought with his work ethic and with Duncan not being there anymore, now it's just like, it's the perfect time for him to like establish himself as one of the league's best. And right now, I think people are missing out on him a little bit. I have him in the same category as I have LeBron and Steph Curry and Kevin Durant. I don't have him as that, you know, a small tier down. I have him right amongst them. And he's not like the fourth guy out of those. He's one of them. Like, you can interchange him all you want. And it seems like people are still, oh, he's like a system player. He's a product of Pop. Well, no, he's... You know, that might have been true in the early parts of his career, but now he is the system. Mm-hmm. There's a major difference. Now everything revolves around him, his decision-making, the way that he, you know, leads defense to offense in the most perversely manner ever. It's just ridiculous what he's doing. And I think what we're seeing right now is the birth of a guy who's knocking on that door that Tim Duncan just walked through. Like, we have guys like Carmelo Anthony, who's going to be in the Hall of Fame. Sure, he is. But he's not knocking on that elites of elite door. He's not one of those absolute top players. Where Kawhi right now, he's entering that conversation if his career progresses in the way that it looks right now. He's going to be one of those guys that you in 20 years' time say, oh, I would take that guy to start a franchise.
Yeah, for sure.
He's
going
to be that good.
To your point about having him in that, like, you know, the top of the top, on NBA assets, we have him as the number four asset in the league, ahead of Anthony Davis, ahead of Kevin Durant, ahead of James Harden. A lot of that is due to his contract. You know, he's got three years, $57 million left, which is just laughably low under this new cap. But, you know, you said it, like, he looks like he's just ready to take the throne that Tim Duncan left for him, and he's ready to be this, like, he might not put up huge numbers like a LeBron or like a Kevin Durant or like a James Harden, like, you know, these like massive triple double stat lines every night, but his superstardom is two way. Like, the fact that he is so good on defense, if he's putting up 30 points a night and smothering the opposing wings, like smothering, you know, a Durant or a Carmelo or a Paul George or a LeBron, it doesn't matter that he's not also chipping in 10 rebounds and 6 assists. Like, that is a box where it can't really fully capture his impact. So,
exactly. Like Duncan, actually.
Yeah, yeah. So, again, San Antonio, they really just might win 50 games. I mean... I don't know when it's going to end. It's amazing. It's truly amazing. You know, we mentioned Damian Lillard earlier against the Clippers, against the Jazz on Tuesday. He had 39, 9, and 6 in the win over the injury-ravaged Jazz. I think the only thing to say there is he is not underrated, as we talked about. As we talked about in our division previews, he is a very good All-Star caliber player, and the only reason he might miss the All-Star team is because he has very tough competition. I think the big one, I mean, we can't go without discussing Anthony Davis. You know, we mentioned him earlier, had 50 points. He also had 16 rebounds, 5 assists, 7 steals, and 4 blocks against the Nuggets, and they still lose. I mean, you know, they're missing Jrue Holiday. They're missing Tyreek. So that's part of it. But, Sarah, are you a little more concerned now that the Pelicans are really wasting a transcendent year from the Brow?
Yeah, I mean, that is sad. And they're going to, because they just don't have much around him. There's nothing else that's going to happen. It's going to be a rough year again. So, yeah, how long is he there? How much does he have left on his contract?
It just kicked in.
He's got 5 years.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they could figure out how to break some people in. But, yeah, I mean, it's just, that's just not a good team right now.
Yeah.
He's the team. So it will be a shame if he spends his career like that. Hopefully he doesn't. But there's not a lot of hope around the corner at the moment, is there?
Yeah, I mean, Holiday will be back at some point. You know, he's not hurt. He's just his wife just had the brain surgery, so he's just tending to her and their newborn child. So that is a bright spot, you know, that Pelicans fans at least have that. We don't know when he's coming back, but, you know, it's not like he's coming back from an injury. Tyreek is coming back from an injury, so we just don't know when he's coming back or how effective he'll be. But, yeah, I mean, you know, they recalibrated this summer and got rid of Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon and brought in Solomon Hill and Etuan Moore, and you're figuring they're going to be more defensively oriented, and then they allow 100-plus points to the Nuggets. So, you know, Brow, I think the good thing is that it took one game to remind everyone that he's a transcendent talent when he's healthy, you know, and we can't discuss those top tier players without mentioning him. You know, these aren't like empty stats. That's a historically good stat line. So you can accuse him of putting up big numbers on a bad team like Boogie does or like Kevin Love did back in Minnesota. But I mean, that to impact a game like that is absurd. So we can only hope that the rest of the Pelicans start carrying a little bit more of their weight and that they get healthy soon. James Harden's another guy. You know, I had him as my MVP. He puts up 34-17 assists, which were a career high for him, and 8 rebounds against the Lakers on Wednesday, and they still lose. And Morton, you were trolling me on Twitter immediately after that happened. I admit it. I'm concerned. You know, I thought my point about Harden putting up monster numbers proved valid at least through one game. The Lakers they're not a good team necessarily, so we have to see if that holds true. But you know, Mike D'Antoni is talking about wanting Harden to average 15 assists, which sounds crazy. And then you look at that game, and through the first quarter alone, he has 12 points and 9 assists, and you're like, oh my god, like this is amazing. Like James Harden really can play point guard. You know, they really stagnated offensively late in that game, and it seemed like Luke Walton targeted him on defense a lot, which may have slowed them down on both ends. But I'll admit it, Mort, you can troll me. You can let the world know that my MVP pick is not looking great after one game.
Well, you know, he's still producing at a high level. Here's the thing. Like, imagine if the league had sort of a prime, I know it's sort of ridiculous, but a prime Amari Stoudemire out there who's used to a fast-paced offense such as D'Antoni's, in which he played. Like, if you have that one big man who can roll to the basket with authority and who's athletic, and you put him alongside James Harden, that team is going to win damn near 60, and he would be the MVP just because he would be averaging those 15 assists compare, and as well as 25, 28 points. He just needs that little extra help. Like, yeah. Ryan Anderson, you can more or less only pick and pop with him, and that's going to be easy to defend down the line. Yeah. You need that one role guy, and Clint Capella is probably not the perfect role guy.
Yeah,
especially when he can't, you know, can't hit free throws.
Right. He showed he actually played well against the Lakers. I mean, you know, yeah. not the top tier competition, of course. Eric Gordon also missed a couple wide open threes that could have changed the game. I mean, Donatas Matiunas is still out there in like contract purgatory. I believe they still hold his rights, and they just haven't offered him a deal yet. We don't know what condition his back is in, but you know, if they reach some kind of agreement over the coming weeks, that'd be a really interesting guy to add to this team. And then Patrick Beverley is also coming back. He had knee surgery, he's out for 3 weeks. So maybe that will help reduce some of the strain on Harden defensively once Pat Bev does come back. But yeah, I admit it. I mean, I had Houston in the playoffs too, and I'm a little nervous after watching them give up 120 points to a Lakers team that, you know, Vegas projected to win around 20, 25 games.
Just still take a minute and just think about these 3 days, right? And you mentioned Harden. We've had a game with a guy scoring 50. We have had 40. We've had a triple-double. Now we have Harden with a 34-17 game. We have Boogie with a 37-16 game. I mean, this is ridiculous. And it's awesome. Oh my God. But please don't ever leave me again, basketball. This is unprecedented, I think. I can't remember a beginning to a regular season that's this awesome.
Yeah, I can't either. And Russ had a triple-double against the Sixers. He had 32, 12, and 9, and he would have gotten a triple-double, but Embiid ruined it with an awesome chase-down block at the end. And then Miles Turner, we mentioned him earlier, he had 30, 16, and 4 blocks against the Mavericks. So, yeah, I mean, we were talking about this before we started recording. You know, just compared to the NFL season, which they're hemorrhaging ratings, you know, on Thursday night you have an awful Titans Jaguars game, and the Titans go up 27-0 at halftime, giving no reason to stay tuned to the second half, except if you're playing fantasy and you have Blake Bortles because you hate yourself. and then like the NBA, you know, we have Spurs Warriors in the first night, we have Clippers Blazers on Thursday, we have a bunch of really amazing performances. It's like the dichotomy between where the two leagues, their health right now, is incredible. And then even, you know, Tuesday night, it was Tuesday night where Adam Silver and Michelle Roberts are sitting side by side on the NBA on TNT set, and they're just coexisting peacefully. Like, think about where we were, you know, 5 or 6 years ago when David Stern and Billy Hunter were like at each other's throats and wouldn't even be in the same room together. And now we're 2 months away from this labor agreement expiring, and it sounds like we are on, you know, they have the ball on the 1 yard line, and they're just trying to punch the final deal, like the final details in. The league is in incredible shape. So I think it's safe to say we all missed basketball a great deal, and we are all very happy it's back. And just the amount of, like, all of these guys we mentioned, what, you know, like, not a single one is over the age of 30. So all of these guys are going to be around here and dominating for at least the next 5, 6, 7 years.
LeBron is. We never mentioned LeBron. Oh,
yeah.
But outside of that, you're right. These are youngsters.
Yeah. Like, Miles Turner is in his second year. Yeah. I mean, Kawhi's in his sixth. Dame's in his fifth, I think. Yeah. Brow's in his fifth. Like, all of these guys are in their mid to late 20s, if not early 20s.
I was overly emotional, I would actually draw like a comparison to the fact that Kobe, KG, and Duncan retired. Then this is sort of like meant to happen, meant to be, that you have all these young guys at the very beginning of the next season saying, all right, old guys, we're going to take it from here.
Yeah, we got this. Don't worry.
We got this. Roll credits, right? Yeah.
Yeah, right. Right. And it should be noted that KG will not be gone long because it sounds like he's joining the NBA on TNT.
That's so awesome. Like, wow. Look, that came as a total surprise. I was so hyped. And for a second, I had my hopes up that he was going to replace Shaq. And then I found out that Shaq was staying. And then I cried a little bit. But okay. You know, at least he'll make him sound a little bit smarter.
Yeah, one would hope. I mean, I think we're all... safe to say we're all very excited to have KG back in our lives. And he's going to be awesome in that role, I think. He was never one to pull any punches, so I think hopefully he keeps Chuck and Shaq in line a little bit once they go off on their completely ridiculous tangents. And
I wonder where Duncan is going to sign. Like the Weather Channel?
If he has to do HEB. He can't betray his longtime endorser. So I mean, we're all just thrilled to have the NBA back. I think, you know, we will touch on some of the more fun off-court antics as the year goes on, but you know, the big takeaway from the first 3 days is just what a great place the league is in. So well done, NBA. We're gonna now move to our final section. It's called the My Crush, where, you know, we've just talked for 20 minutes about all these superstars who had monster performances, but there are some under-the-radar guys that also are showing out early in the year. So, Sarah, I'm going to start with you because I stole the guy who you wanted.
You did.
But yeah. I gave you a couple good options, so I want to hear who your crush is this week.
Okay. Yeah. You're still gonna have to let me just say a little bit about your guy, but I'll wait till you say something.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, you suggested Dedmon, so I'll go ahead and pick Dwight Dedmon. He was exhilarating last night. Like, Boogie was murdering Powell all the first half, and it was really, really hard to watch. And I was like, Tim Duncan, please, please come back, brother. But Dedmon came in the second half, and he really... he stood up to it. I mean, he defended well. I mean, Boogie's still going to crush because that's what he does. But Dedmon got some stops. He got a bunch of rebounds. Let's see. He had 7 rebounds. He had 12 points on 5 of 6 shooting. I mean, what more could you ask from the kid? So that was pretty exciting. I didn't know much of anything about him coming into this year, except for I had heard that he could offer some rim protection, and I was certainly hoping he could. But he definitely showed a little bit of that last night, and like I said, good rebounds, and I was not expecting him to do much of anything as far as scoring, but he had a nice touch last night, just putting back rebounds, mainly. I mean, he's super active on the glass, and we could really use that, so thank goodness for him. Hopefully he keeps it up.
Is it too early to start asking if he should start over Powell?
I've already seen people saying that. So, I mean, man. You know, Powell, we could use Powell in the starting five for the fact that that offense still looks disturbing at times, as it did at times last year, even though it's a little different. Like, if we just throw it to him on the elbow, hopefully he can help move the ball. Like, that's what I want from him, facilitate, and I'd like to see him hit the little jumper, but... that the problem is there's so many guys in that group shooting the mid-range jumper, and when it's not falling, it's not good for anybody. So hopefully he can bring that, but yeah, we're lucky to have Dwayne for what he can bring. That's for sure.
Yes.
Who knows? I don't know if Pop's gonna... I mean, you guys have mentioned before that Powell, when he went to Chicago, did not want to come off the bench, did not want to end That's games correct. On the bench. Right. So that could be an interesting thing if that ever comes up. Hopefully it won't be a problem, but I'm not going to worry about it right now.
That's fair. You're 2-0. We won't start muckraking yet. Morton, how about you? Who are you crushing on this week?
Oh, I have you both beat because I know who you pick. Cool. I have Thabo Sefolosha.
Ooh, interesting.
Because that guy deserves it after the whole breaking the leg by the police thing. And yeah. So 13 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 5 steals, 6 of 8 from the field, drained to 3, 22 minutes of play. Go Tabo. This is the guy who was drafted actually by the Sixers, and the Bulls traded for him on draft day in 2006. Rodney Carney, I think, was the guy. Who, oh, right, Brian?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Bulls had this vision of Tabo actually playing point guard, like a 6'7", 6'8 point guard. Never really quite worked out, but he did have some good moments. And then he, you know, went to Oklahoma City, and he was sort of a bit player. So it's nice to see him once in a while just peek his head out a little bit and saying, you know what, I can still put up some numbers. I can still play major minutes and contribute. And 13, 7, 5, and 5 in 22 minutes after that whole debacle? Hell yeah, Tabo. Go on with your badass self.
he was a big part of that Hawks team before that whole police breaking his leg incident happened, which is, mm-hmm. you know, that a lot of the concern about the Hawks in the playoffs that year was like, hey, Tabo is really important. That's a big piece that we are suddenly missing. So, yeah, it is good to see him back in action again. You know, you never want to see, I don't care who you root for, you never want to see injuries. So you want the league to be as rife with talent as possible. So it's very, very good to have everyone, you know, more or less healthy to start the year. The guy I'm picking that Sarah is mad about is my boy Sergio Rodriguez. So Sarah, I'll let you go before I do. Because my again, rose-colored glasses with Sergio.
That's all right. I'll let you get into details, but I just was going to say how fun it is to watch a point guard who just really has a great grasp of the game, and especially the pick and roll. Like, I just love, I could watch that forever. So I really enjoyed watching him the other night, making the timing passes, pocket pass, the pass that he threw, like the no look pass, bouncer. Oh, so my good. God. I just love that stuff. So I enjoy watching him. I should also mention that Deadman had 4 blocks the other night. I knew I forgot yes. something. 12 points, 7 boards, 4 blocks.
All right. As someone who signed him in the B-Ball Breakdown Dynasty League this summer, I'm very happy with what I'm getting from Dwayne Deadman so far. Yeah, I mean, look, the Sixers, I mean, I continue to this day to say if the Lakers had let D'Angelo Russell follow the Sixers, Sam Hinkie would still be there. They have lacked a real threat at point guard, you could say, since Michael Carter Williams, but even he, you know, look at how he's fallen over the last 3 years. He just put up numbers because there was no one else to do that year. I mean, they have not had even like replacement level point guard play. They had Ish Smith in 2014 after MCW left. They had Kendall Marshall to start the year last year. They had Tony Roten when he came back. They had TJ McConnell, who, while I love him, is nothing more than a third-string point guard, you know, on a decent to good team. And then they brought Ish back again, and he, like, led a slight resuscitation, and then teams figured out he couldn't shoot, and they just plummeted again. I mean, it was just fun to see the Sixers with a real point guard. Like, I just not used to seeing the Sixers have a guy who can feed the ball to players in advantageous situations. And I think, you know, I'm hoping that Jahlil Okafor has a better second year than he does his first year. And I'm thinking that Sergio will be a big part of that. Like, if they can hit him when he's got good post position already, he's not going to have to, like, back someone down for 20 feet and then take a off balance turnaround hook shot. Like, feed him when he is 6 feet from the basket, he wakes one move. You know, he had a couple of really good moves the other night, and I think Sergio is going to be a big part of the Sixers, especially while Jared Bayless recovers. So he had, I think, 12 points, 9 assists, 4 rebounds against OKC. You know, he dueled Russell Westbrook and lived to tell the tale. I'm thrilled to have even average point guard play, which is something the Sixers have sorely lacked for the last couple of years. And, you know, he's only signed for 1 year, so I don't think he's going to factor into the Sixers' long-term plans. But while we've got him, I'm going to enjoy him. So that will do it for our opening night edition of the NBA podcast. Again, you can check us out on Twitter at the NBA Pod. Be sure to give all three of us a follow as well. Check us out on iTunes, leave us some reviews, give us some downloads. Any feedback is always welcome. And again, if anyone knows someone with intro music, let us know as well. Until next time, guys, good luck to your teams. I'm going to hope for the first Sixers win of the year. As always, joined by Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. Great talking to you guys.
Likewise, Brian.
All right, bye.